Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. Our selection this month is the story that won the 2016 Robert L. Fish Memorial Award for Best Short Story by a New American Author. That author is E. Gabrielle Flores, a geography professor and lifelong mystery fan. Her first work of fiction is set in the Dominican Republic, where she once served in the Peace Corps. Here she is reading The Truth of the Moment, her debut story from EQMM's December 2016 issue.
A hot day, a dusty road, no breeze, no clouds, no birds. If there had been a bird, perhaps it would have been brilliantly colored, green, pink, and yellow, or red, orange, and purple, the way people who don't live in the tropics think tropical birds look. But this dry, cactus-studded southwestern corner of La República Dominicana did not look like a tourist brochure. No forest for miles, and the ocean was as far away as the capital city. Months had passed since there had been any rain. If it had been flying overhead, this bird, this beautiful, bright-colored, soaring speck of imagination against the hot, pale turquoise of the sky, it would have looked down on two human figures making their way slowly along the unevenly rutted, rocky, hard-packed earth, one rather tall and one very small. The bird, if there had been one, might have swooped gracefully down to land in one of the bayahonda trees that provided scanty shade, becoming the only cheerful spot of color livening up the brown, spiky branches. And it would have been caught and eaten immediately by one of the local residents, perhaps cooked over mesquite charcoal from that selfsame tree. Thus, desert evolution has led to the survival of boring, dust-colored birds that blend in better with their environment, especially in places like the village of El Callejón on the Dominican side, but a stone's throw away from the Haitian border, where hunger was common and colorful plumage was just another obstacle to a good meal. The two figures, a father and son, were on their way to obtain a bull and a sow from some people who would not want to give them up. The father, Wilson Santos, was explaining to his only legitimate son, six-year-old Elvi, why the animals they were going to collect had been living, temporarily, with a family on the other side of their village.
"You see, Elvi," Wilson said in his deep, melodious voice, "this family has our animals because they needed some money last year. I was able to give it to them. They promised to pay me back this year, and they have not. So we will take our animals home today." The sun was high and bright, as it usually was by mid-morning. Elby squinted up at his father, tall, strong, handsome, with that light brown skin, those white teeth, those gray eyes always so full of certainty. Wilson was wearing old clothes and an ancient purple Peña Gomez baseball cap, bleached in the tropical sun, almost to white, that had belonged to his father, because, as he had said, you do not want to look prosperous when taking animals from people who have borrowed money from you. He looked like a struggling farmer, not the successful businessman he really was, except for the boots, which were fairly new and nice. Wilson did not walk long distances in bad shoes. Elby thought that was a problem, but he did not mention it. They continued on their way, avoiding the occasional deposits of manure left by passing livestock. Elby liked animals. Burros were gentle and patient. Dogs were loyal and intelligent. And other animals made food. He did not want to think about someone coming and taking their cows or pigs or chickens away.
"Papi, I still don't understand how this bull and pig belong to us if the other family has been raising them."
Why can't they give you the money and keep the animals? Maybe they would rather have their animals. Wilson smiled down at the boy, his son and heir, his third and youngest child with Cheeky, and his future business partner. Such bright eyes that never missed anything. So intelligent, just like his mother. Only needed a bit of guidance, that was all.
"Because I don't really want them to give me the money," said Wilson. "If these people, the Paniagua family, pay me the money, that is all we get. You see, as long as they owe me money, I can have them feed and care for the animals for us."
"Oh."
"From time to time, I can come and collect some that are nice and healthy for us to keep or to sell in the market. There are many families like Senora and Senor Paniagua around here caring for our animals in this way. Some of them don't even know it yet. It is a lot of work caring for animals, and I am a busy man." It was confusing, as it often was when Wilson explained things. It was not that way with his mother. When Cheeky said something, you understood exactly what she meant. Like last night, when she had told Wilson that he needed to find somewhere else to sleep. Wilson had disappeared into the night to return early this fine Saturday morning to collect Elby. And right after their desayuno of orange juice, boiled yuca, and salami, they had set off across town to fetch the animals. The animals, he had said, were to give to Cheeky so she would allow him to sleep in the house again. Wilson walked at a leisurely pace so that his small son could easily keep up. El Callejón was not a large village and did not take more than a half hour to get from one side to the other, even walking slowly. But they were taking the longer way, not on the paved road, but on the dusty, steeper side path. Elby could see that there were fewer houses here, and they were more run down and shabby than the houses on the main carretera. The police station, the clinic, the elementary school, and the nicer houses were all down the hill on the main road. That is where lots more people were, men sitting in the bar playing dominoes and drinking rum, women in front of houses and little groups exchanging news, kids hanging around the corner store eating dulces, doing everyday people things, watching the world go by. Elby realized that by taking this back road, fewer people would see them going to the Paniagua house. Hardly anyone to see Wilson dragging out the reluctant livestock while the family protested and complained. One time, when Wilson Santos had brought home a cow that had been temporarily living with a different family, it had screamed and pulled against the rope all the way to their house. The cow had not seemed to understand that she really belonged to the Santos family. Elby decided not to mention this observation to his father yet. They were approaching a house towards the end of the road, near the place where the road split. The upper branch continued far into the lomas, the hills where the really poor people lived. The lower branch was a shortcut that circled back down to the more populated part of El Callejón. Elby suspected that they would not be taking the shortcut home once they had the animals. He was not happy about that because he wanted to see Pico, his cousin, who lived close to the main road next to the bar. Maybe there would be time to go play with Pico later. They arrived at the barbed wire fence that surrounded a rock-strewn field near the Paniagua house. Some skinny, grayish goats stood, unmoving as statues, outside the fence. They had stick frames tied around their necks to keep them from wandering too far. On the other side of the wire, grazing on the scrubby, straw-like grass, were three sleepy cows, brown as dirt, and a healthy-looking black bull. Closer to the house, an enormous sow lay, a spotted black mound, propped up against two sacks of cement
with her pink, squalling piglets squeezed against her side. Chickens scratched up bugs in the yard. A bony yellow dog got up in slow stages, looked at them with a bored expression, and moved stiff-legged into the shade of a guandule bush and sank gratefully down. Wilson laid his hand on a smooth section of the fence so he would not get nicked on the barbs and leaned down to whisper to the boy, "Listen to me, Elby. When we go in, I will tell a story. It is different from the story I just told you. I want you to temporarily forget the story I just told you and only remember the story I am going to tell these people." Elby started to get a funny sensation in the pit of his stomach, like the way he felt when he ate a green mango. He didn't like the feeling.
"Poppy, are you going to tell a lie?"
"No, I am not going to lie. Lying is a sin, as your mother has taught you."
"Then how are you going to tell a different story without it being a lie?"
Wilson Santos took off his frayed baseball cap and looked at it, and then up at the hot blue sky. He squatted down beside his son and put an arm around him, pulling him close. "I want to tell you about something very important. It is called the truth of the moment." Later, after they had gone around to the front of the house, a faded blue structure of uneven palm slats and corrugated zinc roof, Elby was still turning the concept of the truth of the moment around in his head. And suddenly, he understood. They could see inside the house. It had three rooms, one right beside the other, and the dirt floor advertised a family that had not accumulated quite enough pesos yet to buy that third bag of cement. They met the Paniaguas clustered around the open doorway of the cocina, a separate structure that, with the thatched roof outdoor latrine and the house, formed a living area shaped like an irregular triangle. It was too early for the midday meal, but there was nothing else to do, apparently, besides wait by the kitchen door for the boiled pumpkin and rice to be dished up. Fussing about in the cramped, smoky building was a thin, worn-out looking woman in a shiny gray polyester blouse and once black cotton shirt held together at the side by safety pins. Her dark hair, pulled back by a print scarf, was nappy at the edges near her pale face, a sign that she had not been to a salon in some time. A nursing infant was clutched to the breast that stuck out from the blouse. The drab color spoke of a long period of mourning, probably for her mama, Elby thought. An equally worn-out looking man sat on a small, lopsided wooden chair with a goatskin seat, holding a metal cup of water that he had just dipped, Elby guessed, from the big stone jug in the corner of the kitchen nearest the doorway. The farmer's hands, large and calloused, were gentle as he used a bit of the water to wash crusted snot from the face of a coughing little boy. The child was leaning against his father's thigh, wearing a green camouflage t-shirt and nothing else. Elby counted four children in total, including a red nylon panty-clad toddler in the arms of a girl of about eight in what had once, many years ago, been a lacy blue party dress, and the baby held by the cooking woman. An elderly doña, probably the man's mother, sat in an equally elderly wooden rocking chair, smoking a pipe. She wore a hairnet, a dingy white shawl over a pink nylon nightgown, and brown plastic sandals on her gnarled feet. The Paniagua mama politely offered coffee, which Wilson accepted for both of them, and lunch, which Wilson graciously refused, to everyone's relief. Elby watched as the woman reached up to the crotch of the forked branch that propped up one side of the small building and took down the yellow plastic needle powdered milk jar that now held the precious supply of light brown sugar. Then she shifted the baby around slightly to rest on her bony hip and squatted down to add a generous amount of the sugar to the fragrant dark liquid boiling in a battered pot that rested on three rocks over a charcoal fire. The Paniagua children watched, each mentally subtracting some sugar from the coffee they themselves would have later. Elby Santos took his tiny metal cup of hot, sweet coffee and went around the house with the three older kids to tease the piglets and look at the bull. He could hear Wilson's sad truth-of-the-moment story from the yard, all about how Cheeky had been diagnosed with cancer of the womb and the hospital had demanded payment for her treatment. Elby blew on his coffee and asked the children if any of the cows were pregnant, and the older girl with the toddler said yes, there were two that were. The coughing boy made a dirty joke about the bull, and the older girl smacked him a lackluster blow on the shoulder. One cow was about a month from giving birth, she added, eyeing the strange little boy narrowly. Elby was used to looks like that, as his father was the town brujo, a witch, and he was Wilson's son. That made Elby almost a junior brujo in the eyes of many locals. The senior witch was going on about how the treatment to save his beloved's life would leave Cheeky unable to bear any more children, and she would never be the same woman. Elby knew that his mother would not have had any more children at any rate, because after he was born, she had gotten an operation. He had overheard Cheeky talking to Biko's mama, Damaris, about it one day when they thought they were alone. Elby saw that the piglets were about old enough to be weaned from the gigantic grunting sow. He gave each child a sip of his sweet cafe and then swallowed the rest, dashing the grounds on the earth like the adults did. He watched the half-naked little boy, the one with the cold, wander over and squat to poke at the damp soil, then suck the sugary moisture from his finger. The coffee had tasted good going down, but now it sat in Elby's stomach like sour medicine, making him feel slightly queasy. Wilson Santos was close to tears now. He was so sorry. He knew it would be a hardship, but he had to ask the Paniaguas for the payments that they owed, with, of course, the past year's worth of interest. Then he stopped, and Elby looked across the yard to see Wilson bury his face in his hands. Chickens scratched in the dirt and clucked disapprovingly about what little they found there. Time stood still for a few seconds as Wilson let the seeds of his plan take root and grow in the minds of the family. They all knew what had to happen next, as if they were veteran actors cast in a long-running play following a script that had been written many years before. Elby's stomach growled and cramped. The Paniagua family was going to have to offer him their bull and sow. The animals were worth far more than the money they had borrowed, even with the interest, but they had no money to give. The rice was dwindling, and they would be eating nothing but boiled pumpkin as the noon meal for a week or two until they could sell their corn. Bitter coffee with the hard bread rolls for breakfast once the rest of this sugar was gone, and only warm conversation for supper. A rooster crowed a short distance away, sounding inappropriately cheerful. They would struggle, but life was always a struggle, ¿verdad? They would still have the goats, the piglets, and the cows to make do. How to plant corn next year without the bull to pull the plow? Well, Dios would have to provide. They could always sell a goat if things got too tight. The cows would give birth, and there would be the extra milk for the children to drink. They always collected a few eggs from their chickens every day. The piglets would grow up fine and fat on the weeds and such that grew around the latrine, even without the mama to produce more babies with the neighbor's boar. And Elby was suddenly there, one tiny arm around his father, comforting the other still holding the now empty coffee cup. "It will be okay, Papi. Mommy will be fine. Dios will not let Mommy die."
Wilson was proud, his heart filling, face almost smiling behind the feigned grief. Elby got it. He understood the concept of the truth of the moment. He would make a wonderful partner. Oh, the plans he could implement. A small boy assistant at his side, with his innocent, honest, open face and high piping voice, saying that it was a good thing that when Papi told us that the doctor wanted so much money, we all prayed to Jesus and Maria and San Miguel and San Bernardino. And then Papi went back and the doctor agreed to accept 3 piglets as payment during the treatment. Wilson froze in mid-sob, his hands splayed to goggle at this blabbermouth child, Cheeky's treacherous offspring. The treatment would take 3 weeks, the doctor said, and after that, he would accept 1 calf if Mama is better. Elby finished with a final comforting pat on his father's stiffened back. The family breathed a collective sigh. Even the nursing baby, pulled temporarily from the woman's flat breast, looked happily stunned by the good news. The brujo of El Callejón was, for once in his life, speechless.
"Jesús magnífico," whispered the mother tearfully into the silence.
"Eh, verdad," murmured the father.
The old doña, cackling around her pipe, heaved herself out of her rocking chair and hustled off, slew-footed, to fetch a rope for the piglets, before Dios changed his mind. Later, the brujo and his boy took the shortcut, the road towards the village center. The day was still hot, but this road was not nearly as dusty. It was the paved and smooth one that met the main carretera. Still no breeze, still no birds. The sky remained clear, but there was a storm cloud. Wilson was that cloud, silently fuming, his mental state ping-ponging between disappointment, shock, and anger. Elby was ignoring his papi, skipping and happily pulling the 3 chubby piglets under thin homemade bit of twisted jute. They were on the main road now and would be able to stop by his cousin Biko's house after all. Maybe Tia Damaris, his mommy's younger sister, would like a piglet. Wilson finally managed to find his voice.
"Elby, I was trying to get the people to offer the bull and the sow. You knew that. I told them a story that I knew would convince them. They were ready to hand over the animals, and you changed everything in the middle.
But Papi,
don't interrupt. Now all we have is 3 baby pigs, and maybe a calf next month. All my planning wasted. I thought you understood. Damn it, what the hell were you doing back there?"
Elby's stomach no longer hurt. Things were now back in balance. Nothing was lost. He looked up at his father and smiled. His face was as open and innocent as ever.
"I did just what you did, Papi. Exactly what you told me to do.
I told them the truth of the moment."
They walked in quiet for a time, approaching the busier strip of small shops and larger homes of the more prosperous families of El Callejón. To Elby's delight, Wilson stopped in front of the small, well-kept, pink and white house of his Auntie Damaris and her husband, the truck driver. His cousin and best friend, Biko, came out and fussed over the pigs. The dark-skinned boy was the same age as Elby, but a head taller and half again as broad. Wilson considered watching the 2 boys play. If they gave Damaris a pig, he might be able to persuade her to convince her older sister, Cheeky, to let him return home. Yes, he would tell Cheeky about sparing the poor family in the name of San Bernardino,
patron saint of generosity and hospitality, of accepting the two piglets and the coming calf. He called out to Damaris, and she invited them in. She informed the two that they were, luckily, in good time for lunch. As they entered the house, Wilson paused in the doorway, his attention drawn to something bright and multicolored. A pretty little bit of a thing caught up in the branches of a tree next to his sister-in-law's house. It was purple and orange and red. Wilson plucked it from the branches and turned it over in his hand. It was a crumpled flyer advertising a live merengue band performing that very night at the bar next door. Maybe he would not be home till late.
The Truth of the Moment is copyrighted by E. Gabriel Flores. Opening music for the podcast is by Juan Esteban Sanchez Mircea and was obtained from the Community Audio section of the Internet Archive. The closing music is by Carlos Alberto and was obtained from the Community Audio section of the Internet Archive as well. Mixing for this podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.